wonderful to be back here and in this beautiful space. Thank you to you and Mark Shokai for allowing us to come and organize our sit here. And it's all of a sudden it's fall. Feels like we got a couple extra weeks of summer, but when I came up here, I took a recommendation from Soshin to take the Taconic Parkway instead of coming up 84, and it was a beautiful trip yesterday, this a really golden early autumn day, and coming through the mountains, I could really see the signs of autumn even more clearly than around here. The leaves were very definitely turning. And also there was that, to me, that signature sign of autumn, you know, just that one leaf drifting down. And I guess there's something about that image that really gets to us, because there are so many poems written about it. There's great beauty at this time of year, but also for me, there's always sadness and melancholy mixed in with the beauty of the season, and that sort of even intensifies the sense of beauty. And I remember one of the first poems I ever studied in school, maybe it was in the seventh grade, it was an E.E. Cummings poem. A very simple one, A Leaf Falls, Loneliness. And the typography was in the shape of a drifting leaf. A leaf falls, and then L, one, and then one, and then one, and then Enith. So a leaf falls. One-one-oneness. And a great poet in our Zen tradition, the Soto Zen hermit Ryokan, wrote also a famous poem about a leaf drifting down, showing first its front, then its back. And so there's something in that image the beauty of falling freely, and the destination is the ground, and to be consumed by the earth again. That's inspired many poets. And I came across a couple of weeks ago a poem that was inspired by the poem. That's kind of where we are in the postmodern world. Poems that are commentaries on poems. But it was written by a Soto Zen priest out in California. And what I liked about it is it really caught a state of mind that a lot of us practitioners can get into. I think those of you who have been practicing for a while, and I think that's most of you, I think you'll be able to relate. So this is a poem in response to Ryokan's poem about the leaf showing its front and showing its back. He says, "I was reading a poem by Ryokan about a leaf and how it showed the front and back as it fell. And I wanted to call someone, my wife, my brother, to tell about the poem. And I thought, maybe my telling about the poem was the front of the leaf, and my silence about the poem was the back. And then I thought that maybe my telling and my silence together were honestly just the front of the leaf, and that the back was something else, something I didn't understand. And then I thought that maybe everything I understood and everything I didn't were both actually just the front of the leaf, so that the totality of my life was actually just the front of the leaf, just one side, which would make the other side my death. Unless my life and death together were really still only the front of the leaf. And then he says, I had left the branch. I was falling. I was loose now in the bright autumn air. I had left the branch. I was falling. I was loose now in the bright autumn air. And sometimes when I think about our practice, I think, I was talking to Tony, what do we get out of this practice? I think one of the things is we need that. I thought, and then I thought, and maybe it's this, and then it's that, and our minds are constantly, that part of our mind is constantly looking for a place to settle. Oh, Zen is about this. Oh, I get it now. The Dharma is this. Oh, well, yes, I'm going to study really hard and work very hard, and then my life will be like this, and I'll understand this. That part of our minds has an overwhelming desire for a solid platform. And because we have that desire, it's very hard for us to let go, to be that falling leaf. But actually, it's a false problem. It's a delusion. It's a hallucination. We are that falling leaf. That is our life. And the only thing that keeps us from seeing it is the ego, which is also a falling leaf, you know, shooting out its thoughts and its judgments with total freedom, one after the other. When we sit in meditation, we can see that very clearly. Even our thinking mind is totally free. It just does its thing. The brain shoots out its thoughts and judgments completely at liberty, completely unhindered, just like our heart beats, and just like our breath comes in and our breath goes out. So, if our life is this falling, this drifting, this total freedom, how do we express that? In other words, what does that life look like? Or you could say, what is the Zen life? And the answer is, it looks like you. there's a story about the Japanese founder of our lineage, Dogen, who, as many of you know, he went to China, you know, because he wasn't satisfied with Zen in Japan, and he wanted to go deeper, wanted to go to, you know, where Zen had its origins. And so he made a tour of monasteries, and people were extremely impressed with him, and they showed him some, you know, they would come and show him the secret documents that they had in their monastery. Sometimes they would show him transmission documents, and you know, Dogen was kind of a stickler, and one time this head monk, Zong Yue, showed him a transmission document from the Yunmen school of Zen. So we're the Soto school. At that time there was a Yunmen school of Zen that you know, didn't last until the present day, but was a going concern then in the 13th century. And so Dogen looked at this document and he asked Zong Yue, "Reverend, there is some difference among the five different sects in the arrangement of names on the transmission documents. Why is that so? If these words come directly from India, well, why is there a difference?" So I think we can see in that the fundamentalist mindset, right? Well, if it's not, you know, the Bible says this, and I know what the Bible means, and that's it. So, yeah. So even though it had been already, you know, more than 1,000 years since the Buddha's time, he had this touching faith that these documents were really, copied, you know, precisely from ancient India. So he said, if these documents came from India, why do the documents of the five schools differ so much from each other? And Zong Yue says something wonderful. He said, "Even if there is a vast difference, just understands that the Buddhas of the Yunmen school are like this. For what reason is the venerable Shakyamuni revered? He is revered for his way of awakening. For what reason is the great master Yunmen revered? He is revered for his way of awakening." Upon hearing these words, Dogen had an understanding. So this brilliant young monk came to China to find the real deal, only to find that the real deal is different in every time, in every place, and every person. What is your way of awakening? How do you manifest all of this reality, which is nothing more than the drifting of a leaf? Each one is a manifestation of that reality, of that total freedom. But the $64,000 question is, how do you manifest it? How do I manifest it as Ryotan, you know, who, compared to Shakyamuni or Yunmen, doesn't amount to very much, but Shakyamuni and Yunmen cannot be Ryotan. Mm-hmm. They cannot live in the causes and conditions of 21st century life. This is my time, this is my place. This is my opportunity to manifest the eternal drifting of the leaf, which is this Dharma, which is neither the same nor different than the Dharma of Shakyamuni and Yunnan. So, when we talk about the way, each of us is the way. If your way looks like Ryotan's way, then it sucks. I want to see Meikame's way, Joe's way, Tony's way. And of course, then our thinking mind goes, oh, well, good, then anything I do is the way. Well, that's just the mind trying to find its platform again. It begs the question, who are you? What are you doing? What is this drifting leaf right at this moment? There's a well-known, very short koan that goes like this. The great world is vast and wide. Why do we put on our priest robe at the sign, at the sound of the bell? The world is vast and we have total freedom. Our life is total freedom. Our life and the life of the whole universe is just this drifting of the leaf, according to the laws of cause and effect. Limitless possibilities. So why do we put our priest's robe on at the sound of the bell? Well, you know, it doesn't have to be a priest robe. It can be a business suit, or it can be a sweatshirt and jogging shorts. But when the possibilities are limitless, why do we limit ourselves by saying, oh, it's 8 o'clock, time to get on the train and go to work? Well, this seems like a limitation only because our ego distinguishes between the vastness and limitlessness of possibilities, and the ego says, oh, well, I have to do this now. I have to go to work and make money, or I have to put on the robe and be a priest and, you know, do this Zazen Kai, and that's limiting me. But actually, when we let go of that side of our mind, we can see that the limitlessness is not something that's out there in some hypothetical universe that we've imagined. The limitlessness is simply, okay, here's my ticket. I'm on my way to work. The limitlessness is never separate from our own life as it is right now. It's not some kind of limitlessness of our imagination or the imagination of a Hollywood screen writer, you know, space, the final frontier. Well, yeah, space, the final frontier. Here it is. Look no farther. commentary on this little koan is one of my favorite verses on any of the koans. And it's a simple verse. It goes like this. If you understand, all things are one. If you do not, they are different and separate. If you do not understand, all things are one. If you do understand, they are different and separate. I love this verse because it really, just like the modern poem that I read initially, it undermines this tendency of the mind to want to find a platform. So I hear this among fellow Buddhists all the time. Well, everything's an interrelated whole. All things are one. Therefore, I should do this. Well, there's no therefore, and actually all things are not one and interrelated. Of course, the more familiar form of delusion is, you know, I'm me and you're you, and I'm going to figure out how to get the most stuff, and all the bad stuff I'm going to make sure other people get. That's a very familiar form of delusion, the feeling of being different and separate. But actually, neither oneness nor separation is the heart of the matter, is the truth. What is the truth? Well, you are. There's no special way that you have to be you. Your life, just as it is the free and limitless drifting of the leaf as it wends its way down to the earth. Each of us has our own calling, different talents. Some of us are drawn to mathematics and engineering. Some of us to poetry. Shokai was telling me about her daughters, one very urban and one who's very into organic farming, likes to live in the country. Well, which one is the truth? Which is better? Which one is more the Dharma? Living in the city or living in the country? Or maybe they're both the Dharma. Or maybe neither one is the Dharma. What is the truth? In our drifting, we're fortunate in this practice to have some guidelines. In other words, just as the drifting of the leaf, although completely free, but when it's studied by scientists, we can trace that it follows certain principles. So it's freedom and it's following of various scientific laws. They're not separate from each other. There's both total freedom there and there's cause and effect. And it so happens that in our practice we have the precepts, and we have the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and they could be, and they can be understood on different levels, but at the most fundamental level, Buddha is this bright, open, limitless, spacious freedom. And Dharma is the way one thing follows another, cause and effect, which functions freely. And Sangha is the absolute non-separation of those two things. No Dharma, no Buddha. The three of them together are the three treasures understood from one perspective. And so, as we continue our drifting, we can be guided, not looking for our freedom anywhere outside the seemingly pedestrian world of cause and effect that makes up our lives. So the total freedom and limitlessness of life is there when you're doing your income taxes, just as much as it is when you're sitting on your cushion in a beautiful setting like this. The interpenetration of causality and freedom are what allows our life to be the thing of beauty that it is, that allows us both to enjoy the limitless freedom of the Dharma and also to put on our pants one leg at a time, just like we do every day. And to realize that the difference between eternal life and the life of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is exactly nothing. They're not found apart from each other. They're just two ways of looking at the same thing. I'll wind up by focusing, so you can say the three treasures are like the front end of the precepts, and the back end is the final precept, which sort of brings them full circle, which is the 10th grave precept, not slandering the three treasures. So we start with the three treasures, and we end with the three treasures. And Bodhidharma said, self-nature is subtle and mysterious, and the one Dharma not setting up dualistic ideas of Buddhas and sentient beings is called the principle of not slandering the three treasures. In other words, if the Buddha is something apart from yourself, and the person sitting next to you having that idea in your head is slandering the three treasures. Letting go of your feeling of separation, realizing that your life, however imperfect your ego judges it to be, realizing that your life is the life of a Buddha and that you can manifest this limitless life through the sincerity of your practice, then you're no longer disobeying the precept of slandering the three treasures. How could you be slandering the three treasures? You've become the three treasures. There's nothing outside yourself to slander. And so each one of us is the manifestation of this drifting, free, falling leaf. And I thought I would conclude with just one more poem from Ryokan that sums it up. And sort of, to me, gets at the difference between thinking I'm a falling leaf and being the falling leaf. It's a very short, simple poem. He says, "The sound of maple leaves falling in this mountain village makes it hard to tell a rainy day from one that is not. The sound of maple leaves falling in this mountain village makes it hard to tell a rainy day from one that is not." This is how a great poet can allow us to have an experience that goes beyond the words. And when our minds open in this way, we can enjoy the rest of our retreat listening to this symphony of falling leaves, which are our interpenetrating lives as human beings.